Welcome to the Patient Activation Network podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cavallo. I have with me today Lucia Morrow. I'm so happy to have Lucia with us. She is an ovarian cancer survivor, an artist, and a filmmaker. Lucia, welcome to the show.
Hi, Matt. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you very much for coming on here and sharing your story. Before we get going, could you just give us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. For most of my life, I was actually a storyteller and a writer. So I've been writing poetry and short stories since I was in grammar school. I continued through, you know, majoring in English and communication in college. I also was very engaged in the performing arts. So naturally, over time, I combined those interests and became a theater and dance critic and arts writer in Chicago. So I was with the Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Tribune, a lot of theater and dance magazines. I was also a contributor to various radio programs. I was completely immersed in the arts. The other side of me was a great lover of Italy and all things Italy. It is my background. And I was very fortunate to write for an Italian-American newspaper and travel throughout Italy and write about its culture and history and many, many aspects. And during that time, I became a photographer. So I had all these interests that were combining. And then about a good 10 years ago, my husband, Joe, kept encouraging me to tell my own stories. I've been critiquing and talking about everybody's other art, that I finally sat down and I started to write a screenplay about two heroines of Italy's 19th century unification movement, and was finding that my life led up to filmmaking, where I had the love of photography. I love film. I was very close to actors and theater and my writing. So it all came together, and I started, writing this screenplay and was pursuing that route, you know, as an independent filmmaker. That was, you know, around 2010, 2011, and then my life changed because in January 2012, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer.
Thank you for sharing that. It sounds like you've got this movie that you're putting together, and then all of a sudden your life goes sideways. Let's talk about your personal experience with ovarian cancer. Can you tell us about the diagnosis and what happened there and how everything changed?
Yes. As we all know, the symptoms of ovarian cancer are either vague or non-existent. And at the time, so this is in 2011, I was 47 years old. And that's a point where your body starts changing anyway. I was starting to feel certain perimenopausal changes. And they didn't seem that significant. I mean, they were more of maybe weight changes and menstrual irregularities. I'd had this on and off bloating. But I thought, oh, that's pretty normal for a woman my age. Then it just started getting weird. I found that the bloating wasn't always going away. I couldn't really button my pants. I started to feel full. I couldn't, you know, I'd have a couple of bites of food and I'd have to push the plate away. And I really wasn't that aware of ovarian cancer. I don't think there was a lot of information out there. But interestingly enough, that summer, I was out and about. I take a lot of buses in Chicago. And there was an ad campaign that I believe was put together by the government, like it was a national health group. And there were all these posters on the sides of buses. And they were saying, women, ask questions. Be aware of these types of gynecologic cancers, ovarian, cervical, uterine, endometrial. And I thought, that's very interesting. And it came through a couple of symptoms up there, and bloating was one of them. And I thought, it's as if these posters just fell down from the sky and were in front of my face. And I started doing some research. So then I went on the internet and I was looking at ovarian cancer. I thought, this seems like it. It doesn't seem like it. I asked my gynecologist. He went the route of, no, don't get too worried. It could be gastrointestinal. You might want to see a GI doctor. Let's not jump to conclusions. It could be perimenopause. And I'm thinking, you know, I believe gynecologists should go to ovarian cancer first because of its vague symptoms. But I thought, okay, well, let me give it another month. Let me see what happens. Well, as it progressed, I started to get more bloating, but then something very unusual happened. I woke up in the middle of the night. I was shivering. I was ice cold. I had a fever and I started vomiting, but it was more like a foam. It wasn't anything I ate. It wasn't like food poisoning or the flu. And my husband was so alarmed. We just thought, what is going on? Went to the gynecologist and he said, it's still too soon. We don't know. This could just be a coincidence that you could maybe have caught a virus and it's tying in with your perimenopause. And, but he said, go ahead. Okay. He said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to, you know, take the CA125 and, you know, you have to do an ultrasound and, but we're also going to do a pap test because, you know, you're due for that. And at that time, he still didn't seem that there was great urgency. And I set up the ultrasound. We did the CA125. But after, you know, he did the exam, I got these horrible, horrible cramps in my stomach. And I started to vomit again. And that was it. We just went to the emergency room. And while I was at the emergency room, the doctor ordered a CT scan and more blood work. And at the end of it, he said, it looks like you have ovarian cancer. So I'm hearing that from an emergency room doctor. And he said, the next step, you're going to need to talk to your gynecologist, but we highly recommend you go to a gynecologic oncologist who specializes in this. So that was the next step. And my gynecologist recommended the man who I feel saved my life, who is my gynecologic oncologist now. And I saw him about 3 days later. Can you believe I had surgery 2 days later? So it was ER. A few days later, I meet the gynecologic oncologist. He said, there's such urgency. We've got to get you in. 2 days later, I had the debulking, total hysterectomy, you know. And went immediately into menopause and then started chemo shortly after that. I think what kind of saved me in a very strange way is that the reason why I had the fever and the chills is because the tumor had ruptured. So it created almost an infection that alerted me to symptoms that were more noticeable. I will add that the irony of all ironies is that I had surgery, I was starting my chemo, and I got one of those form letters back from the hospital that says, you know, your pap test was normal. So because your pap test was normal, we don't have to see you in a year. And I want to frame that letter because clearly the pap test is not a screening for ovarian cancer.
Well, and you brought up some really important critical details that I'd like to just explore here for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the things that we're told is that early detection can lead to better outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me throughout your story that you're saying, doctor, there's something wrong with me. I need another test. But the doctor's saying, well, you know, this is kind of common. What advice would you give to somebody else that was maybe in your shoes that was having trouble advocating for themselves?
Yeah, well, I would recommend to not back down, that we all know our own bodies and we know if something isn't right, that we have to be definitive about that, that if the doctor isn't willing to explore that further, and if you continue to ask the questions, but he or she is not fully listening, I would suggest then finding another doctor, or at this point, because there's so much more information out there, finding a support group, a cancer support group or an organization that could point you in the right direction and recommend another healthcare professional who could help you. And I think for the actual medical profession, I think sometimes that doctors focus on their specialty as opposed to more of a holistic approach. So my gynecologist, I actually felt that his area of expertise was more prenatal care. And, you know, he was more the expectant mothers, you know, just, you know, we don't have any children, you know, and of course he was very good about looking for, say, cervical cancer. I mean, I remember having many, many years ago, it was called a LEAP procedure because they found some precancerous cells and he was able to do a procedure and said it was, and that went away. This is, I mean, almost 20 years ago. It had nothing to do with the ovarian. But I felt they were like basic, or say you have cysts. He seemed to be good with that. But I just don't think the ovarian part was so much on his radar. And I think if there could be a more all-encompassing view that I think the gynecologist should have on their wall, symptoms of ovarian cancer, since that's the one that is so difficult to diagnose. It should always be on their radar. And I think even though the CA-125 isn't necessarily a comprehensive screening, it should be something they have you do. I don't see why they couldn't offer an ultrasound. You know, I don't think that would be an issue. I mean, the test they could offer wouldn't be that involved. You know, so I would say err on the side of caution, right? Instead of saying, well, let's wait and see what happens. And, you know, you wait and see what happens. There's not a lot of waiting with ovarian cancer. Essentially, we need to be our own advocates. And we then have to turn to other resources, you know, even if it means, I don't mean to throw people onto the internet all the time, but because sometimes the information can be confusing. But I think we do have those resources and we can just go and start learning more and then finding people who will listen to us. That's the key.
It is so important to advocate for yourself.
Yeah.
I want to pivot here for a little bit. And I understand your cancer came back.
Yes.
What was it like to have that second occurrence of ovarian cancer after you had went through the hysterectomy, after you had went through all the things that you experienced? Could you talk a little bit about that second occurrence?
Yes. I went into the cancer diagnosis, of course, shocked and fearful, not the great unknown of chemo. And yet, I think I went to a part of my brain that said, you caught it early, you're going to get through it, get through your chemo, and it'll be done with. And you could resume your life. This too shall pass. You're going to just get through it and go on with your life. It's not going to come back. You got it early. I kept convincing myself of that. Well, all along, I knew that my gynecologic oncologist was monitoring me. He was monitoring my CA-125. It seemed to be going up and going down. And he's always had a wonderful manner about him to just not scare us, to observe and, you know, be very meticulous, but always say, live your life, keep working, don't get caught up in this. But I could tell that he was really monitoring things. In 2013, he saw something there. I had a scan and he thought he saw a small tumor and he had me get a PET CT scan and it seemed to show something. So he said, it's best we do a surgery to check this out. I wasn't able to do the biopsy for the location of it. And I went in and I thought, oh, I bet it's nothing. I still had that attitude. I have to say something, this is very, again, curious that he did the surgery and there was a tumor, but it was benign. And he removed it. And, you know, I go on and I go, oh, great, great. Then it didn't come back. Okay. A year later, in December of 2014, I had my scan. I always go for my CT scans. I'm usually on a 3-month schedule. And there was another tumor. And it was what they call the mesentery sheath. It was like that fatty tissue on in your chest area. I mean, how did it get over there? So he said, we're going to have to do the surgery. He said, you've got to prepare yourself because we're most likely going to have to do chemo again. And my first thought was, this is almost worse than the first time, because you know what it's like when you know what to expect. So I'm thinking, no, I know what the nausea is going to feel like. I know every single side effect of that chemo. I can't believe it. My hair grew back. I'm going to lose it again. Oh, no. My life is going to stop for 6 months again. And there was a demoralizing feeling to that. And, you know, sure enough, you know, he was able to remove it. We did the chemo. It was bad chemo. It was very intense. The chemo was almost becoming toxic to me. I had to stop it one cycle before it was supposed to end. I thought, oh my God, what's going to happen if they're stopping it before I'm supposed to? But I had to, and my doctor agreed. And I think what that recurrence did for me, well, it did some positive things. It made me live my life with a great sense of urgency because I didn't always know when it could come back. I started to think about, well, what's my next scan and what will the scan say? And I've got to be prepared for that. So on the positive side, it just made me do all the things I wanted to do and do them urgently, like my films. Something that I might put off or take my time with, I dove in like I only had 3 days to do this. And I'd get other people on board. Say, no, this is our deadline. We've got to get it done here now. There's no room for error here. So it focused me. But it also planted in my head the sword of Damocles that, you know, you didn't have any symptoms for that recurrence. You only knew because your doctor is doing regular CT scans and CA125s. So I thought my whole life is going to consist of regular follow-up, which is also good because I'm monitoring my health, but we live scan to scan. It's what we do for the rest of our lives. Now, I had another recurrence after that. So I had been continuing my life. You know, I got through the second recurrence. Everything looked really good. I got my energy back. I was working on very creative projects. But I also participated in a vaccine clinical trial, and this was immunotherapy that was meant to build up the immune system so it could, you know, attack any future tumors. Went through that. I felt perfectly fine. Everything looked good. And again, continuing with my life. Then November 2016 rolls around, and I go for my regular CT scan. I want to point out that my CA125 was a 7 at that time, which is very low. My doctor could have easily said, look, your CA125 is a 7. We could probably wait a couple of months. But he just felt that, you know, ovarian cancer can be tricky and it can hide. So he said, no, let's play it safe. Let's get your CT scan. We did. I was shocked that I had a tumor. It was fairly small, but it was on my sigmoid colon. And I don't know what to say at that point. I mean, that was out of the blue. Did surgery immediately, but I didn't have to go through chemo because of the location of the tumor. And it was just one. It was isolated. They were able to do radiation. And I went through the radiation. And that was a year ago that I finished. And I've been getting 3-month CT scans. And I will say at this point, I have no evidence of disease.
That's great news. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling today? I know you've been through a lot in the past couple of years. And, you know, it's got to be very difficult living day by day, wondering if this is going to come back again.
Yes, I have to put my mind in a certain place. I will say this, my art, my creativity distracts me from going to those negative places. I choose to almost take the power away from the cancer, where I am completely fearless. So, you know, when I have an opportunity, because, you know, I've made a couple of films, making a movie, it's just, okay, production team, we're getting together, we're raising the money, do this, do this, do this. We're on a plane, we're shooting a film. It's just, there's such a definitiveness to it. And I just keep plowing through. It's always like, I won't look back. I'm going to keep looking ahead and live in those liberating creative spaces between the chaos of treatment. So I have to keep my mind healthy and my spirit healthy, because without that, I think it becomes very difficult to heal the body. I don't want to ever go into that space of I'm giving up, this isn't worth it. I turn it around. I kind of want to surprise the cancer and say, I'm going to just keep working and I'm going to outrun you. You won't be able to catch me. With that said, yes, there are other issues. I have a lot of anxiety. You know, I do have moments that out of the blue, I say, oh my goodness, what happens? What if I got to go through this again? How will I handle it the next time? You know, my husband, Joe, is so supportive. You know, there are also those issues of Joe can be very overprotective in this well-meaning way, but sometimes I get upset with being treated so overprotectively because I don't want to feel like a sick person. So there are a lot of contrasting emotions that we go through. And I often find myself having to steel myself, gird myself to not allow the cancer to defeat me.
We're talking to Lucia Morrow, artist, filmmaker, and cancer survivor. Lucia, earlier we talked about how you were going to make films about two Italian heroines. What is the film project that you're currently working on today?
One of the film projects closest to my heart is an original narrative film I wrote and directed, a feature film called 1 Year Later. And I consider it a brave film in that I took the risk of making a film about my experience with cancer. And I was reluctant to do it at first because I tend to take myself out of things. I would rather write a film about someone else. So obviously the two heroines of Italy's Risorgimento were from out of history. I could craft their lines and take artistic license and tell their story, not mine. You become very vulnerable when you're going to tell your own story. It was very close to me. I also didn't want it to be only about me. The point was to make a film that would address the emotional side of cancer and how we move on after a diagnosis, how we process the new people we become. Didn't want it to be a documentary. I didn't want it to be set in a hospital. So here's the genesis of it. Between those diagnoses and recurrences, I told my husband, Joe, that I had to challenge myself. I actually took two trips by myself to Italy because there were places I wanted to see, and I wanted to be on my own, and I wanted to see if I could hop on and off trains and carry my luggage and wander around and, you know, not have that regimented schedule of chemo and blood draws. I just wanted to be out in nature. And, you know, when you take those kinds of trips, you meet people along the way. You'll never see them again. You strike up a conversation. They touch your lives. So I had that experience. And one of my trips was to Aosta in the Italian Alps. And I had this experience where I was taking a train. There was a train strike. I was staying at an Airbnb. The owner of the Airbnb had to pick me up. There were all these things that started, you know, these roadblocks. You know, then there were no buses on Sunday. I had to call him again. So it was very interesting, like just circumstance where I had to just roll with it. Things that might not be going my way, but they ended up being fun and better. And I met great people and, they kind of like inspired me and helped me move on. And it was a place where people didn't know me. They didn't know I had cancer. They just knew me at face value. So they weren't trying to be overprotective. I could be a different person around them. So that's the background and the genesis. So basically, 1 year later is a story about a woman who takes a cathartic trip to the Alps 1 year after completing cancer treatment. The film begins with her leaving the hospital. I believe there are too many cancer films that are set in the hospital that take a patient through treatment. And I personally have had enough of those scenes. I just don't need to see another IV or MRI machine. I really don't need to see it. I was adamant. She's leaving the hospital. Now she goes back to her life. But she really doesn't want to go back to her job. She doesn't even like the clothes she wears anymore. Everything about her has changed, and she and her husband it's kind of shaky. They're not understanding each other as well. You know, going back to the overprotective, the not quite sure how to navigate. Her friends don't quite know how to relate to her. So long story short, she ends up escaping on this trip. And that's where, you know, she finds her space. She could process this new person. She's become, and those around her change, and they understand her better. And she could go back to them with a renewed sense of self. It's very uplifting. And the original music is also acting as a narrator. I work with one incredible composer, Enzo De Rosa, who's from Italy, and he captures the inner world of my heroine in this. So I moved away from epic heroes to create almost these little gems of the human condition. I don't specify the cancer in the film. It's a universal story about anyone who's gone through trauma and needs to kind of re-navigate their path in life.
And where could my listeners go to learn more about these films?
For 1 year later in particular, the website is oneyearlaterfilm.com. And through there, we do have the film and the soundtrack available on Vimeo. I want to point out that this is a very important film that I take to cancer support groups and to medical facilities. I've shown it for nursing students and medical students, for all those groups together, patients, care partners, survivors, medical community. So I could open up a dialogue talking about not so much all the scientific research that's going on, but what are we really experiencing emotionally? And those emotions can be pretty erratic. And I noticed that we suddenly don't feel alone anymore. And because the film also has humor in it, it's always the best when people are watching it and they're actually laughing. That makes me feel like I've done my job. So it's a combination. You can stream it, or we actually bring it to facilities to show directly to cancer survivors, patients, and medical community.
Lucia, thank you so much for talking about that film. You know, as a person living with a chronic illness, I've found that so much emphasis is put on the patient experience that sometimes the human experience is forgotten. And I think it is so important to have those kind of projects that shine a light on the fact that a person is still a person no matter their diagnosis.
Yeah.
Are you working on any other film projects?
Well, I actually have completed 3 films and a TV pilot. And that was between 2014 and 2017. And I probably have about 4 more ideas for films, including one that I've already written the script for. So I'm going to just keep along this path of being a filmmaker, discovering new things about myself and sharing with others and hopefully touching their lives.
We're talking to Lucia Morrow, cancer survivor, artist, and filmmaker. Lucia, as we get to the end of the show here, do you have any closing thoughts that you want to share with our audience?
I'd like to say that, you know, right now I'm participating in an extremely empowering event. It's called Our Way Forward, and it's a collaboration between Tesoro and the Moth Storytelling. And I and two other individuals are going to be sharing our stories on stage about our experience with cancer. And we're able to really reach deep down in our inside ourselves to and kind of push ourselves to explore where we're at right now. And I found it to be like exercising another part of both my heart and my head, I guess, to find out what motivates me and to be able to get on stage and share a story in front of a large group is something I've never actually done. I mean, it's very different to give a speech. It's something else to tell a story as if, you know, I'm a performer or an actor. And I must say that it's given me a lot more courage to want to share this story and allow others to not be afraid that cancer patients can lead a vibrant and fulfilling life. It's not the end. There's always hope. And I think programs like Our Way Forward give cancer patients, survivors, care partners that opportunity to show we're not alone. I mean, we're very aligned with got to address the emotional part. You have to talk about some of those psychological issues before you can heal the body.
What impact do you think storytelling experience will have on other women going through this ovarian cancer?
Storytelling, as we know, dates back to the beginning of time. I think that it's a communal activity. It embraces us. I think that it puts a face on cancer and it really makes us feel like we're not alone. I mean, just being at this event, I've met other women who I absolutely love and admire. And I've learned so much from them, and I'm seeing how much we have in common. And sometimes I felt like I was in a bit of a vacuum. I was kind of in isolation. But no, there are many of us, and we share similar goals. I am coming away from this in no way solemn or contemplative. I'm really, really energized. And want to go out and do more.
And for our listeners, if they wanted to get involved in the Our Way Forward program, how could they find out more information?
I recommend that they visit the Our Way Forward website. So it's ourwayforward-oc.com. And I love the website because there are videos from other storytelling events. You get perspectives from everyone, really, cancer patients, survivors, care partners, you know, spouses, doctors, nurses. I mean, you really get the whole spectrum. And these are people you can relate to as opposed to a website that has doctors speaking about the latest research on clinical trials. That can be a bit overwhelming. This brings it home to, oh, these are people with cancer, not cancer patients.
Well, Lucia, thank you so much for stopping by the program today and sharing with us your personal story, your films, and we wish you continued success and continued good health.
Oh, thank you so much, Matt. And what you're doing is so incredibly valuable. Thank you so much.
She's Lucia Morrow. I'm Matt Cavallo. This has been the Patient Activation Network podcast. We look forward to bringing you another inspirational story soon.